Hi, guys. We want to thank our great sponsor, Legion M. They are the first fan-owned entertainment company. We love working with them. They create really incredible experiences for people. If you're someone who wants to feel like you own a piece and are a piece of the industry, it's a great way to do it. They do meetups all over the country. They have a really cool community going online. I cannot recommend them enough. Go to legionm.com for more information.
Hi, everybody. I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
And you're listening to Maltin on Movies. And sitting with us is an old friend, Jeff Ross.
Hi, guys, gals.
Young friend. A young friend.
Hi, movie fans. Hi, comedy fans.
The Roastmaster General of the United States.
Of the world.
Of the world.
Hell yeah.
Wow.
Limit me, bro.
No, man.
I mean,
you are the best, though. It's not like a question about it.
It really isn't.
No.
Well, people are trying, but they can't catch me.
You are one of the most naturally funny people we've ever. It's true, though, isn't
Thanks.
It? But you are, and that's what makes it so much fun. And you were kind enough to give me and my husband tickets when you were doing at the now no longer there House of Blues.
Right.
Recording stuff for Roast Battle.
That was a fun one.
It's just so damn funny.
You're always welcome at my shows.
Thank you. But you know, like, all your pals drop by, which is crazy too. Chris Rock was there the night that we were there.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, it's comedy. More than ever, I think comedians are like, brotherhood's not fair because there's so many women too, but we're a fraternity. It's almost like I'm a comedian before I'm an American, before I'm a Jew, before I'm anything.
Never before a comedian. You're a Jew.
Yeah.
Never.
Probably
before
right.
You're
well, all
Jew.
Comedians are somehow Jewish.
That's
Lenny
right.
Bruce said that once.
Did he?
Yeah. No. Good. I'm like in full roast mode right now because we're going back on tour. David Tell and I on our Pumping Mike show. You're invited to that too.
I am such a huge David Tell fan because Insomniac, I lived on that show.
The best.
I am an Insomniac. That was everything I could have dreamed of. And seeing him out there and seeing him with you, it's
I talked him into coming out west. We're going to Morongo and Harris, SoCal. He only plays casinos because they let him smoke. He really loves
that's
the casino.
So funny. That's so funny.
Yeah.
That's worth a trip to Morongo.
Yeah. Now.
And you know what I mean?
More on go.
Oddly, though, people know you obviously from your stand-up work and from all these specials that you continue to do. But we sort of met each other through a movie, which is your home movie.
Right.
I had to look up the year today. It was 2005. It's a long time ago.
I actually shot it in 2003, edited it in 2004, and then people like you saw it in 2005 on Showtime, and we did that amazing screening with Larry Gelbart that you attended.
So much fun. Oh, God, that was...
Yep. That was a great
time. It's called Patriot Act, a Jeff Ross home movie.
Yeah.
And you can still see it, and you can purchase it even on your website,
I
noticed.
Yeah, I did put it up finally.
And it's a very entertaining and really inspiring film.
Oh, thanks.
Because one doesn't associate you with sentimentality in any way. And it's not that it's a sentimental film, but it deals head on with the effect that one can have on people by making them laugh.
Hmm.
You go to the Middle East where our...
Known for its comedy.
Yeah, right.
Where our troops are fighting and are fighting boredom and are, fighting and all sorts of issues that confront them. And you make them laugh.
Yeah.
And it means something. It has lasting value, and that's really special.
Thanks, Leonard. You know, I hear about those USO trips all the time. This was the early days of the U.S. occupation of Iraq, and Drew Carey is a Marine, and he's the one who invited me, and it sort of inspired that trip. Mm-hmm. I always say the Marines love Drew Carey because they love blondes with big boobs. And it changed me. It made me a better person. Aside from making a film that people liked, it won awards and was on Showtime, it changed me. I got my act together. I understood the full meaning of being a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
And, if you can make someone If you get, if a punchline can penetrate a Kevlar vest or a helmet, you know you got a good joke.
That's right. That's not where you test all of your jokes, right?
Yeah, right.
Instead of going to a little club in L.A.
No, war zones.
War zones. No yeah. good guys? Didn't like that? I'll work on it. I'll change it just a little bit.
I also love dangerous comedy. I like stuff that's provocative. I don't have a kids, you know, so I'm not, you know, I wouldn't recommend everyone go to a war zone and do comedy, but, you know, it's the little bit that I can do to give back to my country that allows me to talk smack for a living.
Which you do so well.
Oh,
thank
man.
You.
Which you do so
You're going to
well.
Love the new show because we go even one step further, you know, and I know you love movies, and in the spirit of Mel Brooks, who taught me about revenge through ridicule, we are doing a World War II roast on my new Netflix show where we roast Anne Frank.
Can I just say, hang on, about time.
I think she's...
About time.
It's about time she was taken down a notch.
That's the thing.
You know what? Everything we hold sacred is still sacred. And people more and more were forgetting about the story of Anne Frank. Even some of my friends were confusing her with other historical figures, young women like Helen Keller and stuff like that. And it really befuddled me because we hear so much about the Holocaust, never forget. But if you look on Netflix and so on, there's, you know, 50 Hitler documentaries and almost nothing on Anne Frank. So I talked Netflix into, as part of my new historical roast series, letting one of the subjects be a dream roast of Anne Frank.
I'm truly speechless.
Only you.
Very, very funny comedian named Rachel Feinstein, a friend of mine. She plays Anne Frank, and Gilbert Gottfried plays Hitler.
Oh, God.
John Lovitz plays FDR. And one of the jokes that I say to the audience, I say, if you're offended by this roast of Anne Frank, then just do what FDR did and look the other way.
Hey! Oh, man.
Oh, boy.
And then Fred Willard plays God. So there's an exclusive on your podcast.
That's right. Well, and that
I have
is
not
very
announced
fitting.
This anywhere
okay.
else.
My gosh.
So I have to nod my head, not tip my hat to the great Mel Brooks, who... Mm. So well, really talk about dangerous comedy
sure.
in the producers when he, you know, upended Hitler and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, all right, you know, I'm gonna take that lane.
Wowie, and he did it again in History of the World Part One,
the great,
the Inquisition,
the Inquisition. That was a good one.
Man, oh man, there is still to this day in my head, and I think anybody who's seen it remembers it, a moment in the original film of The Producers, not the musical remake, certainly, but in the original, there is the shot of the audience, the opening night Broadway audience, watching open mouth the production number Springtime for Hitler. And it's the greatest reaction shot ever put on film. And
it's so when we see a really terrible movie, that's how we describe it. Is we look like the audience during Springtime for Hitler, because it immediately, if you can imagine it in your head, you go, oh God, that.
Yeah.
I mean, which is actually how we describe when we watch Black Swan. We looked at each other at a certain point, a la Springtime for Hitler, and went, really?
Do you two normally like and dislike the same films?
No, we
depends.
We have similar tastes, but we don't always agree.
I think he disagrees more with my mom. They tend to be a bit further apart.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My mom is very sentimental about certain things, and my dad is not, and so there are certain things that they'll pick up on. For me, it's usually just I'll connect more or he'll connect more. So I'll either
Some of it's
really,
generational. Yeah. Wouldn't be shocking to, you know, that some things play better to a younger person.
Sure.
You
know, I understand.
But, and some things play better to an older person.
Mm-hmm.
But and I have this soft spot for old Hollywood movies.
Of course.
Even crummy old Hollywood movies in some cases. So that I can't defend or explain. It just is.
Do you sometimes like a movie better, Leonard, because of not what it is and how it came out, but the process, like you know so much about behind the scenes. Like you're like, well, I remember when the film director told me it took 11 years to get the script, and then you see it, and you're fine. You know what I mean? Like
there are times, and of course, there are other benefits. I mean, I love Art Deco, so when I'm looking at films from the 30s, I may be enjoying the scenery, yeah. you know, the scenic design in the shot, or carpet, you know, mm. or the furniture.
Yeah. I worked in art department and wardrobe right, and I remember stuff like that forever. So for me, it's the same kind of, I go, ooh, ooh. Or I'll think about how hard the crew had to work on something. And mm-hmm. I go, oh my God, for 5 seconds of this, there had to be 47 people
right.
holding 18 different, you know, so sure. you do. But again, it's the same for you because you make all these shows. So you know what goes into everything.
Yeah, I'm always impressed yeah. by a beautiful shot.
That's right. Oh, well, that a great, last.
Yeah.
I watch everything you do because it's all so good, and that's what's it's a nice thing to be able to recommend something and not just because we like you, but because
thanks,
it's
Jesse.
All really good. Well, I told you that the song you played when you were in the prison, I mean, that whole series, too.
Yeah.
Where is it available
well,
now?
We got to go into that in more detail.
Oh, but there's so many good ones. So many good ones.
It's on Comedy Central's website
it
and
is.
App.
Good.
And I guess they're going to be putting them out soon on something called a platform that's free called Pluto TV.
Yeah, I've read about that. Who can keep up with
Comedy
all
Comedy Central is working with. So cool. they're out there. I roasted so criminals, good. Cops, and the border.
Nazi right, jokes. Now, let me right. just Nazi
so,
jokes.
Sorry.
In so, front of a bunch of neo-Nazis.
When you were growing up
yeah.
in the beloved state of New Jersey, where I grew up as well, I was in Teaneck. You uh-huh. were
Newark,
yeah.
Union,
yeah.
Springfield.
You were more serious Jersey. Teaneck is Jersey light. It was so close to the George Washington.
Isn't Teaneck where Richard Lewis is from?
I didn't know
Imperial
that.
Imperial Caterers?
Yeah.
Yeah, the great Richard Lewis.
Uh-huh.
We're both, him and I, we have that one thing in common. We're both sons of caterers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's our little gang.
It was the birthplace of Ricky Nelson.
Oh, okay.
That was a claim to fame. And you know who lived there? Pat Boone lived there when I was growing up. When Pat Boone was like a big deal.
Pat,
so that
well,
was our big bragging point.
I think a lot of, not just creative, but especially funny people come out of New Jersey.
Well, there's a
they
huge...
got a lot of material, that's
yeah.
why.
What exit?
Yes,
never. But never mind. But you grew up... you're just old enough to have caught the tail end of the variety show era.
Mm-hmm.
And who did you watch? Who'd you listen to? Who turned you on?
Wow. You know, my earliest recollections of those kind of shows would have been Kids or People Too, mm-hmm. like kids' variety shows.
Mm-hmm.
The Electric Company and Sesame Street, of course. Mm-hmm. I still think of The Muppet Show. Yeah. I still think of them much in the same way I think of Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm.
And Laughing, which I recently have dived back into
mm-hmm.
because I'm a small part of the Laughing celebration that's currently streaming on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
George Slaughter is taking this major victory lap, and he had all the people that are still around, mostly the ladies,
mm-hmm.
Joanne Worley, Ruth Buzzi, Lily Tomlin, and then a bunch of younger, more, you know, more Netflix regulars like myself and Chelsea Handler and Michael Rapaport and Snoop Dogg and Jay Leno was on it and Rita Moreno and, mm-hmm. and Rita Wilson. And it's just fun. I watched it last night. It's a beautiful, really well-produced tribute to Laughing. And some of the clips... Are still stick with me from when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Nixon going, sock it to me?
Yes.
Like, you know, these fun catchphrases that they sort of started all that.
Yep.
So I did love Laughing and then eventually got around to Saturday Night Live as a kid. But to be honest with you, if I really had to think about that, it was Johnny Carson. And I didn't even watch Johnny Carson. I would listen to it. Hmm. My parents wouldn't let me stay up that late.
Mm-hmm.
So I would hide at the top of the stairs
hmm.
where they couldn't see me, but I could listen to Johnny interview Don Rickles and mm-hmm. Buddy Hackett, and I'd hear my parents roaring with laughter. So I knew what these guys sounded like. I absorbed their delivery, but I didn't actually see them
mm-hmm.
till much, much later.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really affected by all those, and I think that informs what I do now. Like, you know, my shows are variety shows.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't get too excited over scripted comedy and scripted drama, although I have a part on a show now. My real passion is putting funny people in funny situations and glitzy staging and a band, and I love all that stuff still.
What's not to love?
Yeah.
That was the beauty of The Muppet Show, of course, was that it was a kind of an imitation of an old-fashioned variety show.
Yeah,
and a good one, too.
On my historical roast show, we have a band, a two-piece band, and they dress up in character depending on who we're roasting. Mm-hmm. So when we roasted Muhammad Ali, they dressed as a butterfly and a bee.
Yes.
You know, when we roasted the World War II roast, they were Mussolini and Winston Churchill. So this comes right from the Muppet Show a playbook.
Yeah.
And I love that stuff, like talking to the camera and just the last person you expect to walk through those doors. I still love all that stuff. It's a great tradition.
You're a showman. But that's a piece of it. You're a showman. I mean, we've seen you through so many hairstyles,
of course. Yes, of course. But who's talking?
I'm easy to find. It's all right. I love when you come out in your Roastmaster General suit, one of those great big ones. It's an art form that we know doesn't exist in the same way, and that's what makes it so much fun.
I love, Don Rickles used to bust my chops. He'd say, every roast, it's like Jewish Halloween. Because he would give me a hard time about getting in costume for these roasts. And eventually, even my director, Joel Gallen at Comedy Central, would be like, you know what? Don't wear a costume this time. Just be yourself. Just go out there and roast. Wear whatever you want on the red carpet. Make a big entrance. But when you're up there, just go full roast mode as yourself. So I do kind of go back and forth, and I think one of the reasons I love doing the history show that's coming out is because I get to dress as a Roastmaster General of the Union Army to roast Abe Lincoln. I got to dress as myself at 14 to roast Freddie Mercury with a Jufro and braces and a concert jersey. I roasted I dressed as King Tut to roast Cleopatra.
So you found a costume designer with a sense of humor.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Roger Forker does a great job. He should win an Emmy for this show.
With a name terrific. Like Forker.
Yeah, right. You can't miss. Yeah, no, I'm very particular. And I also think it speaks to roasting. You know, my dad was a caterer, and yeah, I think when you dress up, people sort of give you some goodwill. And I think when you're dressed to kill as a comedian, you get away with more. You think Rodney Dangerfield would have been as funny wearing a t-shirt and shorts?
No.
The suit makes it.
It's a suit. And the fact that he's always tugging at that collar and the tie.
I'll tell you. Yeah.
But that's one of the most iconic. People may not even, they may only know him from The Simpsons.
Right.
At this point, there are a lot of younger people who don't know who he is, but everybody does the pull.
Just go to YouTube. You know? Because,
I was talking to Bob Saget on my podcast yesterday, and he was very close with Rodney.
Yeah.
And he was just talking about how, you know, I was telling him how if I'm ever feeling the blues, which isn't often, I'll go to YouTube and type in Rodney Dangerfield, and I don't even care what clip comes up. Mm-hmm. I just need to hear his voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not even paying attention to the jokes. I know all the jokes. He's not writing new jokes. He's been dead a dozen years. But just hearing, hey, I'll tell you, my wife, you know, she's a bad cook. I didn't know meatloaf was supposed to glow in the dark. In my house, we pray after we eat. It makes me happy to hear him so miserable. Yeah.
He's incredible.
I do think the suits, you know, the costumes and the suits and
booting
up for a big show.
It is.
You know what? A comedian told me early in my career, he said, you know, if you don't care, why should the audience?
No, it's a wonderful point, and it's lost on a lot of people, and it really has significance.
Yeah.
I remember I had the privilege of introducing Jerry Lewis at the Video Software Dealers Association, VSDA convention about 20 years ago in Vegas, so a huge, like a 4,000-seat ballroom, you know. And they had a dinner first, and then they had this presentation. But Jerry didn't attend the dinner because he wouldn't sit down in his tuxedo.
Right.
That was show business rule number three or four.
Right.
Once you put on the tux, you do not sit down and crease the tux.
Right.
And he took that very seriously. And so he was standing on the stage. And
so
he
crazy.
Was,
because,
he,
yeah.
He was ready to go on. Absolutely.
It's funny
right.
because when I get ready for a show and I'm waiting in the wings, the opening act is on, all I want to do is sit down because I got to. I'm going out there for an hour.
Right.
So credit to those guys.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't want to crease the pants.
It is stamina, though. It's a real performing. It's like going to the theater. You want people to dress up a little when you go to the theater because it creates a certain feeling.
Yeah.
You know, it's why I love places like Magic Castle that are very strict with their dress code, because you walk in and everyone looks a certain way. You kind of go, oh, we're somewhere nice. We're somewhere fancy.
Right.
You bring people into a roast or anything else in that vein and it looks a certain way. As you say, you care. And it makes us go, all right.
Yeah, what's he or she going to bring?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, they took care about their appearance, their look, if you will.
Yeah.
They probably have some good stuff.
So did you get to talk to Rickles much?
Oh, yeah, of course. You know, I mean, I spoke at his funeral.
Oh, my God.
I had many interactions with Don. He came to one of my birthday parties in Sherry Hackett's backyard. Don and I did many. It became a trend, I noticed, around Hollywood that when guys turn 50 or 60, you kind of had to have Don Rickles at your birthday. It was like...
It's a rite of passage.
Yeah, you wanted to get a little spritzing from Don.
Yeah.
And inevitably, I'd be part of that too. So it would be, we would often go back to back at some big shot birthday parties. And I would always prepare. I'd stay up all night writing it. And I'd pull out a piece of paper. And this happened at John Stamos's birthday party one year for his 50th. And I took it very seriously. I really wanted to deliver. You know,
you don't walk in, you know, off the street and try to ad lib with that kind of competition facing you.
Right. Maybe it's too dirty for your podcast, but John Stamos is so handsome, his birthday candles blew him.
Hey! That's a perfect 3 a.m. joke. That's exactly what comes to that.
And, you know, I really did well, and I was really proud of myself. But immediately, Don went up right after me and made fun of me for being so prepared. Because he could do it off the cuff.
Aww.
But, of course, he was probably doing a lot of the same things he probably said Stamos's 40th birthday, too.
Well,
so.
When I was a kid, I read a wonderful book by Steve Allen called The Funny Men.
Yeah.
A really good look, chapter by chapter, at some of the great comedians. And he said that no one could beat Milton Berle in a cutting contest.
Yeah.
Because while comedian number B was trying to think of something funny, Milton would remember something funny that he'd said 10 years ago. And he had a steel trap mind.
Right.
He remembered
everything. Everything.
So, boom, it was right there.
I gave up. Every time I went head-to-head in a roast battle with Milton, I would always go maybe 1, 2, 3 back and forth and be like, all right, Milton, you got me. Because, you know, he just had an endless mind. And my very first roast, he heckled me. Practically heckled me off the podium.
Oh my gosh!
And I had to really hold my own. And I said, Milton, I saw you never know what you're going to see. I told the audience, you never know what you're going to see walking around New York. I saw Milton in an antique shop today, $1,200. And then finally, Buddy Hackett from 40 feet down the dais with no microphone just yelled out, "Milton, let the kid work. Remember when you used to?" And Milton got up, ran down, and kissed Buddy. So I survived that one. But those guys, man, I miss that generation. I call them Mount Roastmore. Buddy and Don and Henny and Milton. Mm-hmm. And it was just, I miss that time of my life a lot.
But that's the problem.
But you're lucky you got in.
Oh, yes.
On that you got to at least spend time with some.
Very, very lucky. And made some great friends through that, and even... You know, it's interesting you mentioned Don. His daughter, Mindy Rickles, is very funny. And she's – I wanted on this World War II roast that I was talking to you about, the historical roast show, to have a representative of America's Greatest Generation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody who represents my Uncle Murray, my Uncle Albie, guys who were in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
My Uncle Murray was a medic who liberated the concentration camps. And I'm like – these shows about Anne Frank and World War II, and you know, what kind of comedic spin could I put on it? And I thought hard about it, and I thought, you know what? Don Rickles, long before he was CPO Sharky on TV, mm-hmm. was an actual naval seaman.
Yep.
And
in the Philippines.
In the Philippines, which he talked about a lot in his act. Mm-hmm. So I called Mindy Rickles, and I said, what do you think about a Navy uniform, full prosthetics, and you play your father?
Oh my God.
And she did it, and you'll see it.
It's
a really moving and also hilarious tribute to Don, and also a nice sort of tip of the hat to the Greatest Generation.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
A really beautiful thing that she did that.
The problem is when you are with those people who are so good, it means that, you know, you kind of raise the bar. And that's why it's tough for me. And this applies to everything, whether it's music or movies. But you don't find everything incredible because they have to kind of go up to what you've grown up with.
Uh-huh.
You know, we have Dom DeLuise, for the life of me, Christmas time, Dom DeLuise in the house.
And Buddy Hackett.
And the two of them going at each other. And I'm sitting there, first of all, confused as to how they're in front of me, but also just listening. They're so fucking funny.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't get better than that. It just doesn't. So that's how I feel. Again, that's part of why we respect you, is because you have that kind of humor where it's natural. Yes, I know you work really hard, but you know you're also just funny.
Yeah.
And I've seen you just in conversations, you can make people laugh. But that's not nothing. You know, there a lot of times you'll meet a comedian who just sort of, they tend to be quite shy. Kind of reserved,
right.
You know? And no one should have to be on 24/7. That's not required. But you do sort of get a sense of who has to work to kind of get there, mm-hmm. and who just sort of is that way. And we're raised around those guys.
When Entertainment
funny.
Tonight
it makes
first
you, it makes you it makes it really hard to laugh at other people.
But that's it.
I'm sure. When Entertainment Tonight first went on the air, they used to cover a lot of events. They go to an art gallery opening if there was some celebrity going to be there. Mm-hmm. They would go to an off-Broadway show opening. All they needed was like two celebrities to be there to make it worthwhile.
Right.
And whenever they went and they saw George Burns, our directors knew to make a beeline for George because he always was prepared with material. He still worked, I think, once or twice a week with Hal Goldman,
mm-hmm.
and I forget it. Curse me for forgetting the other guy's name. But two of his longtime writers, who I think had also worked with Jack Benny.
Leonard, how dare you forget,
I know, right?
George Burns' second writer's name from 40 years ago. How dare you? You know what? I thought you knew your shit. You know what?
I'm so sorry you had to see this.
Can you validate my parking?
I'm so sorry you had to see this.
I'm sorry, Jeff. We don't validate. But they would go to George because he always had fresh material. He would never put himself in a public place without having that.
Without the
in
lines.
His back pocket.
I love that. Joan Rivers is like that, too.
Oh,
she was
Jesus.
Like, I always had new, fresh stuff. And you know who else did that, too? Red Buttons was like that, too. Mm. He would often, even though he would go back to never got a dinner, he would make those fresh.
Yes.
He would make those fresh. And I really enjoyed watching that.
I never heard him repeat himself.
Yeah.
Incredible. One day, I was in the, E.T. was on the Paramount lot, and I went to the Paramount dining room one lunchtime. And A.C. Lyles, the veteran producer who was always there, was having lunch with Milton, who I'd gotten to know a little bit. And A.C. gets up, shakes my hand, hi, how are you? And I say hi to Milton. He says hi to me. And Milton's eating a sandwich. And A.C. says, you know, Leonard, I've known Milton for 55 years. And I just love being with him. He says, and even if I've heard some of the stories before, he says, I don't care. I says, because I just enjoy listening. And I say, Milton, repeat something? Milton would repeat a line. And through the sandwich, Milton said, not my own. Right there. Not a nanosecond had gone by. He had a line ready. That's a gift.
He called me once. I was in a hotel room in Montreal. And he called me from the Friars Club in Beverly Hills about some Friars Club business. And I honestly thought it was my friend Elon Gold, who's an impressionist. I couldn't imagine Milton was, it was a great honor to talk to Milton. I mean, I spent many, many lunches with him, but the fact that he was now calling me and have tracked me down at some hotel in Montreal made me so happy. I felt like a made man.
You
yeah,
are, though.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what that was.
Not
that...
back then, but eventually. Yeah.
If Milton Berle calls you on the phone in a godforsaken hotel in yeah, Canada,
I guess you're right.
You've got it. All right?
You're right.
You know how much that phone call cost? He had to call out of the country for you.
Oh,
that's
no, it was
love.
Free. It was free. It was at the Friars Club.
That's right. He'd only call you from there.
Yeah.
Because God forbid. Yes.
At one time, I know, I don't know if you continued doing this or if it was a fluky thing, but when we first met, you told me that you would sometimes get hired to punch up movie scripts. And did you enjoy that kind of work, or was it?
I did enjoy it. I did enjoy it until I no longer enjoyed it. I really loved it, as a matter of fact. My first real deep dive into that type of work was with the Peter and Bobby Farrelly. So I was learning from the best right away. And there were other really funny, smart people in the room, Patton Oswalt and Ralphie May and others. And I absorbed every bit of it. And it taught me, if anything, that I could do that if I want. If I could punch one up, I could write one. And it was a really good time. It was inspiring. It was good money. It was a nice break from stand-up and roasting to dive into stories and dialogue and that kind of thing. And then at a certain point, I was like, you know what? I'm only going to work on my own projects from now on. And I sort of pulled out of it once my own reputation started to rise up a little bit. I thought,
sure, you wanted to own what you did.
Yeah, I didn't like taking orders anymore. Peter and Bobby were great, but others weren't. And it just didn't have the same, I didn't get the same charge from it anymore. And movies are so slow.
Yeah.
So slow. I mean, look at you guys get to see the fun part, the premieres,
right.
And the screeners, and everybody, everybody's trying to bribe you to see their movie. Where,
and you're used to the immediacy of live performance.
Of course, the laughs.
Yeah.
The laughs, like it's a drug. It's a movie. You know, it'll be out in 2 years. Maybe it'll be good. Maybe you'll still be in it. Maybe your jokes will be in it. No promises. One time I got invited to a premiere of a movie I got cut out of, and they didn't tell me.
Oh, God.
You know how many people have told that story.
There's no one we know, I think, in show business
who
hasn't had that awful experience.
Yeah.
And there's nothing worse.
We had to cut an actor out of my new Netflix show. Not that he did a bad job, but the episode was long, and we had other stuff that had to be in there, and we wanted to get all the episodes down to half an hour. And it's a tough call to make, but I called him ahead of time because I don't want him to see it and not know.
Because
I know that feeling.
That's what it is, though. You have respect.
Yeah.
We do. We hear the story all the time from friends. I was at the premiere, and that's when I found out I wasn't in it anymore.
Yeah, right.
And it is a tough call to make, but you manned up and did it.
Yes, it took me a month.
Never heard you say manned up. This is exciting.
Well, see, it's the first time for everything.
Is that a sexist expression?
Oh, not at all. Oh, as if we give a... Right. No. No. I just never... His other new favorite, my mom and both of them, is OG.
OG.
Yeah. Because everyone says to my dad, you're the OG. And he said to me, what the hell are they saying? So now my mom and dad both say, OG, original gangster. And they're very excited about it.
I thought it meant, oh, God.
In our family,
you mentioned
yes.
George Burns. I thought for sure you're talking about, oh, God. That was one of his best movies.
Yes, it was. Directed by Carl Reiner.
That's right. I forgot about that.
By the great Carl Reiner.
Who's now 107.
Close.
Well, he's
almost
getting there. He'll probably outlive us all. He and Mel both.
Yeah.
They will probably outlive us all. So they are 2,000 years old. And their routine, they'll have to get new material because it'll be looking backwards instead of...
It's like, Big Brother, 1984.
It all came
and went already.
Did you grow up listening to 2,000-Year Old Man?
Of course. My dad would put it on. Oh. You know, I mean, it was so good. And I still, I still worship both of those guys.
Yeah, well.
How did you get to be 2,000 years old? They either shtick a garlic, and then when the death comes, you say, who is it? And they're gone. This is the stuff in my house just over and over.
It's
so
just the
funny.
Best jokes and how we all learned what improv was and what good, clean, not clean, but good, solid joke writing.
Yeah. Well, they did have to be clean then because they were doing it on network TV.
Right.
And so they managed it. And even on their records were kind of G-rated.
Really. Right.
And they managed to do it without crossing that line,
sure.
which at that time was a big deal.
Right.
Yeah.
And the comedy records that were sold sort of under the counter were the ones by Red Fox.
Right.
And Rusty Warren.
Right.
And Bell Barth.
I don't know Rusty Warren.
Knockers Up.
I saw that scene in Marvelous Mrs. Maisel where there's a record store where they're selling tapes and records under the counter.
Mm-hmm.
So fascinating.
Yeah, it's for real. I remember that. I actually do remember. But I never got to listen to any of them.
Huh.
I just knew of their existence.
Right. Too square,
but
man.
I did have a unique experience in my young life. I was promoting one of my books, and I got on the Mike Douglas Show, which was a great book.
Sure.
And in Philadelphia. And I'm sitting in the green room, and Moms Mabley was on the show.
Mm.
And I got to watch Moms Mabley take her teeth out to go on stage.
Wow.
And which I later learned was typical, not atypical.
Mm.
But it was the only time I'd ever seen that. And it's a lifetime memory, let me tell you.
Let me tell you, that is pretty. That is pretty amazing. Some people don't want to wrinkle their pants, and some people,
right?
Have to take their teeth out. Show business is a strange.
All right. So, how did you get so gutsy that you would go into a maximum security prison, and work that
and sing to neo Nazis? Because that's the highlight.
You know, you're talking about a show I did called Jeff Ross Roasts Criminals, and to be honest with you, the title alone. Was the premise. I didn't think about gutsy, and I didn't think about provocative, and I didn't think about Nazis being there, which I soon found they were. But I wanted to do something that was funny.
Mm-hmm.
It started with, guys in orange jumpsuits. Some comedian comes in and busts their chops. It starts with the jumping off point of that's going to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
It's not until I start diving into what exactly it means to go into a maximum security jail, in this case, that I go, can I really do this? Do I have the chutzpah, the guts to walk in there? And if you look at the footage, Leonard, I'm trembling in the beginning of some of those first jokes till I got a few big laughs.
That's an appropriate response.
Yeah. Because we did have a safety meeting. By the way, it was the only jail in America that would let me do this. Though I asked hundreds.
Wow.
And in Texas, they agreed. They take their law enforcement just as seriously as I take my roasting. And they said, if you let us use you as a carrot for good behavior for a month, if you come back in a month and do it, we're in. And I didn't ask too much. There was a huge trust factor happening with the jail. I really admired the jail administrator at Brazos County Jail, Wayne Dickey, and he has a great team there. And I went and met with them. And I said, you know, what about safety and security? And my producer asked, oh, don't worry. And I come back a month later, and he's taking me through it. He's like, don't worry. I go, where are the most dangerous people going to be, just so I'm aware as I work the crowd and so on? And he said, oh, they'll be in the first three rows. I go, what? Why can't you put them in the back?
Yeah.
What do you have to be in the first three rows? He goes, well, you're that way, if they act up or there's a fight or anything, you're closest to the door and they're closest to the door. If they're way in the back and up front in the rafters, we can't get to them.
Huh. Hmm.
But if they're in the front, we can get to them. And of course, there's no guns in a jail. It's all tasers and batons. They don't bring firearms into these dorms. Because if, you know, there's a riot, they'll take them.
Yeah.
So my first joke was right out of the anxiety of, I said, all right, where my murderer is at? And yeah, three guys in the front raise their hands. No irony, not joking. So to answer your question, I'm not sure. I think it was not so much that I was brave or trying to make a point, Leonard. I think it was really, I really would do anything for a laugh.
Well, you've underscored that word anything.
Oh, my yeah. God.
You've proven the point many times over now.
Yeah. Yep.
So it's so crazy because I saw you. We usually see you either at 4th of July at Fred Willard's,
right,
and or somewhere out and about, like at South by Southwest, walking down the busiest street in the city.
Yeah.
And you would tell us what was coming up. So before that special aired, you told me, you said, "Oh, you got it. I think you're going to really dig it."
Yeah.
So it's that kind of a thing where I get. We've gotten to talk to you when you've had your sort of, this is what I think I'm going to do. This is what I think I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And that's part of what makes it so special is to see things come to fruition and go, holy shit, they happened.
Yeah.
You know, it's a big deal.
You know, I always want to take big swings. So much, there's so much stand-up out there, and it's a good time. It's the gold rush of stand-up right now. But you also go, well, how do I stay relevant? How do I keep the roasts not from getting predictable? So I go, well, let's make that lane a highway and roast not just celebrities in tuxedos, but my live audience, you know, the bumping mic shows. Or in this case, we have our roast battle show where the newer comedians will roast each other. And now I'm roasting historical figures.
Yeah.
Bob Saget plays Abe Lincoln. John Stamos plays John Wilkes Booth.
Oh, my God.
And I play myself as a comedian in the 1860s. So it's still a roast. You don't have Abe Lincoln laughing, but you have those too soon moments with the audience.
Right.
If they're not used to, you know, seeing someone as revered and loved as Abe Lincoln. Be told that he should have emancipated the mole from his cheek.
but that's what's so much fun about the. I love when anyone has a chance to learn.
Yeah.
And so the best part, and I have so many comic friends who watch Roast Battle for this, is it's you and either two or sometimes three, depending on who all's with you, giving them sort of explaining, I liked this joke, but I think that if you did X, Y, Z. And so more than it just being funny, because it is funny, it also goes into, did this work? Or here's what I thought you can do instead. And so, as I said, for anybody watching, it's educational too. So it's not just mean.
Yeah.
You know, because that is the difference.
Well, all comedy has to have a point.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise it's noise. It's elevator music otherwise. Yeah. You want to be remembered not just for what you say, but what the reaction is, you know.
All right, so tell us about working with the cops.
Another
special with the Boston Police Department.
This was arguably much more terrifying than the criminals.
Well, that's what I was wondering.
You know, I always had an affection for cops. I grew up in Newark, and I studied karate, and all my karate teachers were Newark detectives. And they were fun guys. They were real, you know, like macho-type guys. And even as I got older, walking around my hometown, New York City, whatever, the cops, it's a hard job. Everybody's yelling at you. You could get shot any second. I did a couple ride-alongs years ago just for fun with the Greenwich Village cops in my neighborhood, and I was like, here's a tough gig. And then... You know, there was all these shootings and so on that were sort of giving rise to the Black Lives Matter movement. And obviously there's bad cops. And there's also a lot of really good and great cops. So it occurred to me, like, what has happened and what's going on and how do cops feel about this, which they don't normally get to talk about. So I did the same thing I did with the jail. I put out a big ask all over the country, all the obvious ones, Chicago, New York, Detroit, you know, Miami, like where are the danger zones? And the only one that would say yes was Boston, where Commissioner Evans, who just retired as the police chief up there, he's very proud of his cops up there. They haven't killed an unarmed person since 1991, and he wanted to brag, and he wanted to take a couple shots at New York and Chicago. So they let me come up there. Unfortunately, he didn't tell his unions I was coming, so they were very skeptical of me, especially when they saw that I had recently been to a Black Lives Matter rally in New York as a way of doing research and shooting footage for the special, for the cop roast. I didn't want it to be a one-sided. I wanted it to be a balanced film. And they tried to shut me down. The unions put out a letter that morning saying, don't participate in this Jeff Ross project. We don't know what his intentions are exactly. And basically, I showed up to shoot in the station house street gang division in Boston, and they basically, in an office not much bigger than your podcast studio here, they kind of cornered me, all the different union bosses, and said, why the fuck were you at this rally? What are you doing? You know, it was very intimidating. And the commissioner showed up. He was, you know, we reached out to him saying, you help. These guys are scaring the hell out of me. They're shutting down this project. I've been working on it for months, preparing a show, essentially. I was going to go do some ride-alongs. I called them roast-alongs, and I was going to appear at roll call and do a little funny roast speech, you know, basically teasing the cops. One of my favorite jokes was about, you know, Boston has a reputation for being a very racially divisive city. I said, you know, if Whitey Bulger, his name was Blackie Bulger, you would have found him in 2 hours. So there were a lot of, you know, sort of like zets, some shots. And what they did allow me to do was do a ride along with two cops that they trusted. And that went well. Mm-hmm. Then I did another one. And then I did another one. And eventually they said, all right, he seems like he's going to be fair. And I said, who would want to see a show about the Boston cops if it wasn't two-sided? If you didn't hear, it'll be boring. Don't you want people to see it and learn something and take the journey and go through the process of understanding what you guys are going through and you gals are going through as police officers? And eventually I came back to New York with all the footage, and I realized I didn't quite have it. I had most of it, maybe half of it, I didn't really have the roast. I had more of a documentary about what it's like to be a cop. And then I said, you know what? I called the commissioner back and I said, is there a police charity that you guys like to get behind? And it was Cops for Kids with Cancer. It's like, oh boy, I don't know how that's going to fit into my Comedy Central special, but let's rent out a comedy club, Laughs Boston, redecorate it with a police theme. And I want all the cops, I don't care if they're detectives or the guys on bikes or crossing, whatever it is, I want them all in there, and we'll make a donation and we'll raise money, and I want people to come on stage and get roasted. And I put a body camera on in case anybody got any funny ideas up there, and I did it, and I did it, and I really... I'm glad I did it because I humanized the cops at a time when I think they really needed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They did. They absolutely did. But that's part of it, is anybody who can laugh at themselves.
Whew, it's tough sometimes because cops, the one thing I will say about them, they're so used to getting berated and yelled at. And every roast joke I made to all the cops up on stage, they never just laugh and take it. They always mumble some comeback. They can't let me have the last word. I found that really interesting.
Oh, that is interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Just always like, okay, you know, always,
yeah.
You know, that's what you think. Like they live with
a lot every day.
Right.
You're saying.
Very, very brave job.
Yeah.
When was the first time you performed?
Me?
Yeah.
April 1st, 1989. Just over 30 years ago. I just had my 30th anniversary as a comedian.
April Fools, you got up there.
It was actually the 31st of March, but I didn't get on until about 1 in the morning. It was at a place on 54th Street in New York that's not there anymore called the Ye Olde Triple Inn.
Oh, I remember that place.
You do?
Yeah.
Wow. I followed a bongo player on open mic night. I should look up what day of the week that was.
That's right. I thought you were going to say I should look up that bongo player.
Yeah, right. I'm sure he's doing well.
Me and that guy. Just.
And that was it. I loved it right away. I didn't know I would love it. I didn't really think of myself as a funny guy or as a comedian. But my friends did. My friend Mark Chapin, my college pal, encouraged me to try it. And that was it, man. I was hooked. It was a hobby. I still feel like it's a hobby in a lot of ways.
How
so? I still love it. Because even though I'm always working, I don't feel like I'm a comedian as my job. Mm. I feel like pitching TV shows, like you said earlier, punching up movies, you know, I'm acting on a show now on Amazon called Sneaky Pete, and, you know, making these Comedy Central specials, basically filmmaking. You know, I directed those.
Yeah, and become a documentary filmmaker.
And the Netflix show that's coming out now, you know, I produced. So I perform with my pinky, but the other nine fingers are writing it, hiring all the writers and producers and director and booking it and making sure the lighting and the set and the promotion. Mm-hmm. That's my career. Mm. The stand-up is kind of fun. I really don't think of it as a job. I don't take orders from anybody. I say what I want on stage. If I'm late, I'm late. They got to wait for me. It's a it's fun. It's like some people play golf. Some people, you know, this is my thing. I really do love being a comedian. It never gets old for me. I enjoy the process of putting it all together and getting up there.
Do you like acting?
I do. I do when it's a break from stand up or roasting. I like it as a it feels like a vacation when I don't have to come up with the material.
Sure.
I get the script, you know, I don't audition much. This one was offered to me and it was a bad guy. Oh, I kind of like this. You know, and Sneaky Pete, I looked at it, and it's created by Bryan Cranston, and Giovanni Ribisi is a very, very good actor. And I thought, ooh, my scenes are with Ribisi. This could be cool. So, yeah, I like it. I like it a lot. I'm doing an animated show called Tangled.
Oh, yeah. I was going to ask you about that, too.
I really love it. It's the most fun job I've ever had.
Now, when you record, do you record like a radio show with the whole cast there?
No, in this case, we don't. They bring me in. It's so, they're so peculiar about every sound and every noise, and it's that they bring me in by myself. And sometimes I sing, and sometimes it's dramatic, and sometimes it's comedic. Alan Menken wrote a song that I sing. It's on iTunes. For Tangled, you know, it's based on the movie with Mandy Moore and Zachary Levi, and they're both in the TV version as well. I'm the only new character that they introduced. I'm Hook Hand's brother, Hookfoot. So I'm basically this disabled bodyguard for Rapunzel, whose dream is to be a dancer. And even though I have a hook for a foot. And I won't, you know, I don't want to spoil it for any 4-year-olds listening, but my dreams come true.
Well, that's great. That's wonderful to be able to have opportunities to do different things.
I love it.
And have variety in your life.
I like to mix it up and I like to change it, try different things. I don't like being predictable. I get excited when I wake up. You know, almost like the later I sleep, the more excited I am to turn my phone on and be like, what adventures are in store? Right?
Yeah.
The Maltons. All right, I'm in. I'm in, baby.
That's great. That's great. And do you like working a double act with Dave Attell now?
It's the greatest. It's seriously, he's my favorite comedian. He's the funniest guy I know. He always has new material. He raises my game. And I never wanted to be in a comedy team, never occurred to me. Buddy Hackett warned me about it years ago because they offered him a part in the Three Stooges. He said, I didn't want to wake up every morning wondering how the other two guys are feeling. So Dave, as much as a curmudgeon he is, I'm very positive, so we sort of yin-yang each other. And I always tell him we're 1 + 1 = 3. As funny as he is, and I do fine on my own, when we get together, I feel like we're undeniable. So come see us, Bumping Mics. Vegas, the Mirage, June 7th and 8th, the Borgata and Sands Bethlehem Memorial Day weekend, Morongo and Harrah's SoCal.
And on Netflix.
And on Netflix, our show Netflix. Bumping Mics. We have three episodes there. Mm-hmm. And I know this is a movie podcast, so I'll say Paul Rudd is part of it. And Bruce Willis has a nice cameo.
Great.
And it is directed by Andrew Jarecki, who's a great filmmaker.
He is a great documentarian.
Yeah, he did The Jinx about Robert Durst, the alleged murderer, and he did Capturing the Freedmans.
Yeah, which is remarkable a killer
movie,
one.
Which Michael Jackson called the feel-good movie of the summer back in 20 years ago when that came out.
The one of my favorite things is my dad watching Gilbert perform because Gilbert is one of the filthiest comedians around. And to see him blush brings me such joy. You know, and he listens to the podcast. He doesn't do it as much on the podcast, right?
No, not when I'm on it. We're talking about
when you listen to
obscure comedy and old-time television. So you're taking roast to the next level now.
I didn't know there was a next level until I thought of it.
Neither did I.
You know, until I actually went and did it and started making the phone calls. And the first call I made was to Gilbert Gottfried. I said, would you, could you play Hitler? And I didn't even have the lure out. And he was like, yes.
Yes.
And we did rehearsal, and I couldn't even get him out of the uniform. He wore the armband to lunch.
Oh,
like, he was so, he loved it. And the same thing happened with all the parts. Like, Bob Saget plays Abe Lincoln, and he showed up days early to try on the costume. He's walking around with his beard. And Seth Green, one of my favorite friends and neighbors and actors, plays David Bowie.
Yeah, that was great.
It's really fun, really, really fun. And we have rock stars playing rock stars, and Josh Homme from Queens of the Stone Age plays Elvis. It goes on and on and on. We do Jaleel White plays Nelson Mandela. It's basically the format of an old Dean Martin roast, but with historical figures.
I just need to say, Jaleel White. You got, for anyone who doesn't know, that's Urkel. That's Steve Urkel.
Yeah.
Is Nelson Mandela.
And he knocks it out of the park. Like, so funny.
Man. Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah,
I can't,
it's a wait. Really cool
well,
show.
Well, but you really have, you have taken your life and your career to the next level, if I.
Thank you.
I dare say, because you are, we've known you as a stand-up comic.
Sure.
We've known you as a stand-up comic who developed a specialty in roasting. But now you really are a producer, creative producer, and devising these wonderful vehicles and ingenious and daring vehicles.
Mm.
It's exciting to see.
That's the Zets for me. That's the Zoom for me. Like, calling friends, not just the big stars and giving them a cool role.
Yeah.
But the people that I'm finding in the clubs, the people that are starting in the writer's room and then working their way up to the dais. Like, that's what I really, really, truly love. Finding raw talent. Because a lot of comics, and it always bothered me, they would be dismissive of young talent, young comics, or they'd be jealous. Some of the greatest icons I've ever met had no time for young comics, did not want the competition. And that always kind of bothered me. I was like, boy, that really seems like a journey nowhere. Mm-hmm. They're going to catch up with you. Why don't you just let them in and help them? You're not going to live forever. Yeah. Well, and so I do get a huge sense of pride when I see somebody new get a break. Or if I give them a break and they make me proud and make me look smart because they nailed it.
That's great.
My writer staff on this historical roast show is a combination of the seasoned people that I would write the Comedy Central roast with all the new people from the roast battles who have never had a day job in show business or writing job.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically raw comics who know how to write roast jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And when you filter that through the more veteran minds, you really have something. And because it's called Historical Roast, it's a history show, I thought it was really important for it to be a people's history. So the writer's room, I'm proud to say, is the most diverse writer's room perhaps in the history of variety television. It's every race, every orientation, and religion. And we have two Asian writers, three black writers, a transgender writer, men and women equally. It's really fun to go to work and hear a 30-year-old black man and a 50-year-old black man arguing over how Frederick Douglass should be portrayed on the show. You know, and when I see my one of my Korean writers taking home a copy of The Diary of Anne Frank to do research, I go, that's what it's about for me. It's like, you know, you're evolving, people are learning, they're getting something new.
Damn, you're really doing something. Mm-hmm.
It makes
really
me happy. It makes me really happy.
It should make you very proud. You should be very proud of what you're doing. So where do people follow you?
I am, we'll be at the Starbucks on Melrose.
Exactly.
And,
yep.
I love Instagram.
Not to where people stalk you. Where do people follow?
He's got to clarify. It's hard, that middle.
I'm easy to find. Yeah. I love Instagram, so The Real Jeffrey Ross. Mm-hmm. I'm on Twitter as Real Jeffrey Ross. You can always email me, roastmastergeneral@gmail. Mm-hmm. If it's something you don't want to post. I love reading everybody's crazy emails. And or they can come see one of the shows. We have so many fun shows coming up. Me and Dave on our bumping mics. We haven't worked together since last June when we taped our Netflix special. Mm-hmm. And it took a while, but I finally got Dave to commit to about 10 dates, mm-hmm. which we just posted on roastmastergeneral.com. And it's selling really well. My hometown of New Jersey, Borgata, we added a late show, which I've never done in my whole career, where I sold out early enough where they go, you want to do a late show? It's a holiday weekend. You'll probably do well. So hopefully that'll fill up. And if not, it's still fine because, you know, we're funnier on the late shows. Life is good.
Some things never change.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what it is. Like, I don't like going on early. You know, sometimes you get a call, you know, is a benefit 7:30.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or even at the Comedy Store, they gave me a 9:45 spot last night. You know, I do 15 minutes. Basically, you know, you make $20. You're working out mm-hmm. material for when sure. you have a money gig or a big tour date. And it's 9:15 when I finally go, oh, I better look up what time my spot is. And I go, 9:45? That's like lunchtime for me. I'm not funny till 11. So I was late. I was late for that one. So, yeah, I'm a creature of the night. I like going on after they've heard a few comedians. Mm-hmm. I don't like being first. I don't even like being second. I like kind of, you know, batting cleanup. Mm-hmm. I like when they've heard all the obvious jokes. And now I get to sort of deconstruct it and rearrange their brains a little
Clear
bit.
Clear the way. Here comes Jeff Ross. All right. Well, we're so glad you made time to come visit us.
What a treat. What thoughtful questions. So thank you, Jesse.
Well,
thank
we like you a bit. Yeah. So we're happy. Oh, man. No, we are. We're so happy to have you here. And you know we're huge fans of everything that you do.
And where do people follow us, honey?
Also at the Melrose Starbucks. Now.
Yes.
We don't drink coffee. We're weird. You are at Leonard Maltin. I'm at Jesse Maltin on Twitter and on Instagram. And
I follow you both.
God bless you, sir.
Sweet talker. And you can always go to leonardmaltin.com for movie reviews and book roundups and all kinds of good stuff.
What are book roundups?
Well, movie books.
He gets so many books in the house, and so he'll try to write them up. And then
there's very little opportunity to promote them nowadays. So as you try to give a leg up to, you know, young comics and all that, I feel it's my obligation to try to spread the word about these movie books, and that's what I try to do. We'll see you folks next week. Maltin on Movies is sponsored today by Legion M, the first fan-owned entertainment company. They've got a lot of good stuff going on, and you can learn about it at legionm.com.